Welcome to the Deep Dive. We cut through the noise to bring you insights that, well, genuinely matter for you. Let's be honest, the professional world today, it feels like it's constantly shifting, doesn't it? You know, new skills pop up almost overnight, whole industries change, and suddenly that career path you thought was solid feels a bit shaky. You're left thinking, how do I even keep up? How do I stay relevant? And maybe more importantly, how do I actually shape my own future instead of just reacting to everything? Well, today we are diving right into that, our topic, skills first. What does it mean for me? And our insights are coming from a really fascinating source, our recent roundtable session. It was put together by the Office for Skills First Practices, the OSP, which is under the Institute for Adult Learning in Singapore. This happened just recently, August 7th, 2025. It's part of their ongoing working paper series. Picture this, 15 experts, local and international, plus hundreds attending in person and online, all wrestling with this key question. How can individuals really take control of their career planning and upskilling now? So our mission in this deep dive is pretty clear. We're going to unpack the barriers people face, the real ones. We'll look at the behaviors needed for effective career self-management. And then the really crucial part, explore the solutions that came out of this expert group, co-created solutions. The whole point is to empower you listening right now in your own professional journey, give you a sort of roadmap for what's coming. Okay, let's unpack this. Let's get to the core challenge.
Yeah. And what's really striking, starting with the background from Working Paper 2, is how it lays out these four main barriers. Think of them as like invisible walls stopping people.
Yeah.
First, you've got situational things, you know, life circumstances, maybe caring for family, just not having the time, external stuff.
Right, the practical realities.
Exactly. Then informational barriers. Maybe you want to learn something new, but you don't know what skills are actually needed or where to even find good training. Lack of clear data.
Okay.
Third, psychological ones. This is big. Fear of failure, anxiety about what's next, maybe just not feeling confident enough to try.
The internal hurdles.
And finally, societal challenges. Cultural norms, expectations around certain jobs, maybe lack of recognition for some career paths. Now, to counter these, the paper first suggested 8 desired behaviors for developing what they called career self-management capacity. And these behaviors themselves, they actually show the range of challenges. Like one was updating your digital skills records, LinkedIn, maybe a future careers and skills passport. It sounds simple, but it's about how visible your skills actually are. Often they're kind of invisible.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's not just admin.
Right. Another was identifying the skills you need for work. Again, sounds basic, but with things changing so fast, it's really complex.
That's a really vital point. It's not just the checklist. You mentioned this difference between a personal mindset and a systemic view. How does seeing both sides actually help someone who feels stuck, like beyond just saying be resilient?
That's exactly where the roundtable discussion got really insightful. They really hammered home that distinction. On the personal mindset side, yeah, people do need to be open, confident, resilient. Absolutely. But, and this was key, the experts pointed out that anxiety, fear, especially if you're just trying to get by, maybe feeling vulnerable, that can totally block you from even considering these behaviors.
Yeah.
You can't just tell someone to ignore that.
Right, you can't just wish it away.
No.
Yeah.
So that leads to the systemic perspective. The consensus was we need better infrastructure, foundational stuff, like a shared skills language. So employers and individuals actually understand each other, robust ways to get employment help, accessible career guidance, and a really core insight, something often missed, building self-awareness, truly knowing where you stand, your potential, your gaps. That's fundamental.
Okay.
But here's a tough truth that surfaced. Talking about skills gaps often feels like admitting failure, not seeing it as a chance to grow.
Yeah, that perception issue.
Exactly. And that feeling makes people defensive, not engaged. Look, at the end of the day, you're making a kind of cost-benefit calculation before you invest your time, your energy into learning something new. So if we want people to engage, the system needs to lower those perceived risks and clearly show how developing skills leads to real, meaningful outcomes in their careers.
That reframing skill gap as opportunity, not failure, that's so critical. So once these barriers and ideal behaviors were on the table, the debate started. The participants had this crucial task, which behaviors are not just important, but also the hardest for people to actually do. And this is where it got really interesting. It zeroed in on the 4 areas needing the most help, the most intervention. The top 4 that came out, the ones they focused on for solutions, were these. First, identifying the skills I need for work, that fundamental awareness piece. Second, developing and executing my career skills learning plan. So making the plan and actually doing it. Third, engaging with my employers or HR on my career skills learning needs. having those conversations. And fourth, demonstrating my skills and capability to prospective employers, showing what you can do. These four really seem to capture the core struggle for individuals trying to own their skills journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that naturally led into the next part of the roundtable, the co-created interventions. The big idea here was moving away from just, you know, isolated training programs, moving towards an integrated ecosystem of shared responsibility, mm-hmm. meaning individuals, employers, even the wider community.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a role.
Okay, an ecosystem approach.
Right. So let's look at the first two behaviors, identifying skills needed and developing and executing a plan. The intervention suggested things like, well, actively building self-awareness and confidence, giving people mind space.
Mind space.
Yeah, like dedicated time, resources, encouragement to actually explore interests and goals, not just being told what course to take, but finding it yourself. Self-determined learning. And crucially, fostering a mindset that celebrates the joy of learning, making it intrinsically motivating. Plus, normalizing failure, creating a fail fast, fail safe culture, where trying something, maybe messing up, is seen as learning, not a disaster.
That sounds good, but hard to implement.
It is. And employers have a big role here too, offering structured support for personalized career planning, using existing resources like Singapore's NTUC career coaches, maybe even virtual or AI coaches to guide people.
That mind space and fail fast idea really hits home, thinking about those psychological barriers. But how do companies realistically create that space in a busy workplace? Does it just become a buzzword?
That is the core challenge. It needs intentional design. It means leaders have to model it, protect time for exploration, have clear policies that actually support learning attempts, not punish them. It's less about one big program, probably, and more about embedding it into how things work day to day, the culture.
Got it. Okay, let's pivot to the third one. Demonstrate my skills and capability to prospective employers. Because learning is one thing, but showing it effectively, that's another challenge. You know, you spend months learning new software. How do you make sure an employer sees that value right away?
Mm-hmm. And here, the discussion really focused on a common skills language. Imagine if everyone used the same terms for skills. It makes it so much easier for you to say what you can do and for employers to understand.
Okay, a common dictionary for skills?
Sort of, yeah. And then the infrastructure to back it up. Things like a careers and skills passport, basically. A verified digital record of your skills and experience you can take anywhere. Also, better skills profiling tools to help you see your own strengths. And job adjacency analysis tools that map your skills to related jobs you might not have thought of.
Job adjacency. Interesting.
Yeah. So what does it all mean for you, the listener? It's not just having skills. It's helping people weave a narrative or story of their skills. Presenting them effectively, providing real-world chances to use them, internships, joint projects, places to actually apply and show what you've learned. And a really interesting forward-looking idea was starting skills career awareness in schools, getting that understanding much earlier.
Right, building it from the ground up.
That comprehensive approach, early awareness, common language, real-world proof, that's what makes skills truly visible and valuable. Which brings us to the last priority behavior. Engage with my employer's ACE HR on my career skills learning needs. This one's often tricky. Requires effort from both sides.
Yeah, initiating that conversation can feel awkward.
Exactly. So the interventions here focused on creating a really person-centric learning culture. Not just top-down training needs, but what you need. This could mean companies setting up internal skills offices or maybe bringing in fractional career coaches for flexible support. Tailored help. Another key thing. Providing playbooks and space for career conversations. Basically, tools and opportunities to help employees find the right words, the right channels to talk about their development and show their value add.
Making it easier to say, here's how my growth helps the company.
Precisely. And technology came up again, using AI for career coaching. Also, cultivating skills literacy upstream for T-shaped skill development. Yeah, meaning you have a broad understanding across several areas. That's the top of the T. But deep expertise in one or two critical areas, the stem of the T. Making those career talks less scary and more productive for everyone.
Okay, those interventions seem really practical, trying to empower people, but also making employers step up. Let's zoom out a bit.
Yeah.
What were the bigger picture principles tying this all together?
Well, connecting it all, the roundtable highlighted some overarching needs, like equipping HR, managers, leaders with vocational psychology skills, basically teaching them how to have better, more supportive career conversations.
Giving managers the tools.
Exactly. And providing workers with clear info about the labor market, clear pathways to evaluate options and see their own skills gaps.
Mm-hmm.
A roadmap, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And hugely important, psychological safety. Creating that environment where you feel safe saying, I don't know this, or I need help, without fearing negative consequences.
That builds trust, that strong social compact they mentioned.
Yes, exactly. It allows people to really adopt a growth-oriented mindset, to see development areas as potential, as readiness for the future, not as failures. Ultimately, it's about boosting your own agency, your power to redefine your career identity, making you an active owner of your journey.
Not just passively waiting.
Right. And recognizing development isn't just formal courses. It includes non-formal learning, too, like stretch assignments that push you or flexible work models that create different kinds of opportunities to learn and apply skills, the whole package.
That holistic view is key. Now, you mentioned online participants, too. Did their views differ much? What did that wider community focus on?
That's a great question. The online contributions were fascinating. A really strong theme that came through from them was self-awareness and reflection. Lots of comments about knowing oneself.
Mm-hmm.
It really reinforces that idea. Before you plan or act, you need that deep personal understanding, strengths, interests, goals.
So introspection was key for them.
Very much so. And they also voted on interventions they thought would best sustain these positive behaviors long term. The top three online ideas were, first, introducing employees to skills frameworks, guides, showing critical core skills, soft skills for different roles, making it tangible.
Like a map of skills.
Exactly. Second, an AI tool for employers, one that could help predict future skills needed based on company plans and then share that info with employees so they can target their learning.
Using tech for foresight.
Right. And third, offering opportunities for person-centric career skills learning planning, which echoes the in-person discussion perfectly. So you see this strong alignment, need for structure, like frameworks, but also personalized support, often helped by technology.
That mix of human insight and smart tech seems vital. Before we wrap, there was one more crucial piece, the additional insights specifically about trade-skilled workers, making sure this skills-first idea includes everyone.
Yes, very important. Because their reality is often different. They might face more constraints, time, energy, money. Traditional career talk might not resonate the same way.
So how does skills first work for them?
Well, the key insight was personal relevance. It absolutely has to answer, what's in it for me? For many trade workers, framing growth as achieving mastery in their craft is much more powerful than abstract career ladders. And it means providing clear, respected skill pathways that align with their pride in their work, pathways that lead to tangible benefits.
Makes sense. Focus on the craft.
But it's not just on the individual worker. It requires systemic change, too. Shifting how society views and values trade roles, seeing them as professional careers, addressing industry pressures, maybe around wages or contracts that hold people back, and making sure the market actually rewards employers who do invest in skills and quality work.
So valuing the skills properly, system-wide?
Exactly. It's about recognizing the huge value these skills bring, elevating them.
Okay. So wrapping up this deep dive, the big takeaway seems to be that helping individuals grow in this skills-first era, it needs that integrated ecosystem of shared responsibility. Individuals, employers, communities all working together, using a common language for skills, with continuous person-focused support. Hopefully armed with these insights, whether you're prepping for a meeting, trying to understand a changing field, or just curious about the future of work, you now have a clearer picture. You see the landscape, the challenges, and crucially, the kinds of solutions being developed to help you navigate your own path with more confidence.
And maybe that leads to a final thought, something for you to reflect on. Considering how fast things are changing, this whole shift to a skills-first world, how often are you really intentionally taking stock of your own career goals and skills gaps, you know, beyond just the yearly review? What specific steps, maybe even just one small step, could you take this week to become a more active owner of your career journey, to really lean into that growth mindset we talked about?